Blog Talk Radio.
What it do, bitch? Howdy, everybody. Yeah, that's right. I just used the word howdy. All right, jam-packed today. So here's the deal. Today, full show for you, jam-packed, like I just said. Tomorrow, we're doing something special. There's not going to be a live show in the regular sense like you're listening to right now, but what there's going to be is... I'm going to, for the election, for purposes of the election, I am going to take the I Stand With political quiz. Now, again, you're not going to be able to see it live, but what's going to happen is I'm going to take it, and then the second I'm done, it gets posted right up there, zero edits, zero anything, just slapped right up there on YouTube. So instead of, you know, listening to the live show like you guys are doing right now, probably around... If I had to take a guess, I would say probably around 12:30 or 1 o'clock. Keep your eye out on the YouTube channel because, you know, a video will hit. And I'm assuming it's probably going to take anywhere from 1 hour to maybe 2 hours to maybe 2.5 hours because you guys know me, and I don't know how to shut the fuck up. And there are a lot of questions on that quiz, so I'm going to dive in. I mean, for fuck's sake, you're going to get, like, my political manifesto tomorrow on what I feel in detail on every single issue. And then at the end of that, what happens with the quiz, for those of you who haven't taken it, is they give you not only who you should be voting for, but they give you the percentages of who you side with and why. Now, we already know who, you know, I side with more than anybody else, but it's interesting to look at the percentages, and it's also interesting they have a comparison with previous elections and all this stuff. So anyway, that's what's going to happen tomorrow. No live show at the standard time like you're listening to right now, but you will get that. Got a bunch of great, awesome stuff today, though. Great, awesome. That's weird. We're going to talk a little bit about Donald Trump. I got a bunch of stuff on Donald Trump. He's been causing a wild reaction in the market. I have some stuff on the election for you in terms of direct ballot initiatives. So for those of you who live in certain states, you're going to know. If you don't know yet, you're going to know what specifically is on the ballot that you can vote directly on. I love direct ballot initiative. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And neo-Nazis and the KKK are coming out of the woodworks. So that's scary. We'll talk about that and much more. So let's get started here, and we'll do it with some stuff on Trump. So there's a very interesting article in the New York Times yesterday about Donald Trump voters who are a particular variety of Trump voter. Specifically, people who are voting for Trump who voted for President Obama. Now, they have a few conversations with these people, and it was really interesting. So what struck me as I was reading it is, and granted, this is a small subset of Trump voters, clearly, but what struck me as I was reading it is, uh-oh, we could have another Brexit on our hands here in the United States. Now, that's not to say, you know, Trump and Brexit are equal in every way. Of course they're not. And that's not to say there aren't many, you know, dwingers in Britain who were pro-Brexit. In fact, there were a lot of well-known, prominent left-wingers who actually were for Brexit. This idea that it's all about bigotry, it's all about xenophobia, so on and so forth, that's just not true. Now, the funny thing is, it is kind of the same thing with Trump here. Now, I think Trump is a much more dangerous direction than Brexit, to be clear. But what they said in the article, and what struck me, is they all had really interesting and detailed personal stories about their economic situation, which basically are leading them to say, fuck this, I want to hit the refresh button, I want to hit the restart button, I want anything that's not establishment. So this is what Michael Moore actually was warning about a few weeks ago. He said Donald Trump is the human Molotov cocktail that a lot of people want to throw at the establishment. President Obama came in and, you know, he ran on the banner of hope and change, and these people voted for him. And they said, look, you know, after I voted for Obama, it was maybe a year into his administration, and I work at this carpet store down the street, and the carpet store went out of business. I lost my job, and I can't get another job. And now maybe perhaps it's unfair for that person to just blame the president for that, as if the president, you know, is directly responsible for a carpet store in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the country. In fact, I'm very sure it's unfair to blame him for that, because when you look at the overall unemployment rate, it has gone down under Obama, though they're mostly low-paying jobs. But anyway, I'm getting off in the weeds here. Bottom line is, the person said, I thought I was going to get hope and change. I didn't get hope and change. The establishment is still screwing me. So that's one person. Another person said, hey, I run a small business. I voted for Obama. I believed in the hope and change thing. But here's the deal. I have a really small business, and I only have a few people working for me. And under the Obamacare rules, I had to get them, health insurance, or I had to cut their hours. So I felt like it was a moral failing on my part that I literally couldn't afford it. So I ended up, I think eventually that person went out of business. So now they're saying, you know what? At least Donald Trump's out there talking about America first. And that's, guys, that's such an important point that the Democratic establishment is missing, because they lost their way. And that is that when Trump goes out there and he says America first, let's stop spending all the money on these useless wars and rebuild our infrastructure, that's a flat-out liberal thing to say. Now, I don't believe him. I don't think he's going to do any of that stuff. But he keeps saying it, and you don't have a good response other than to go, racist. He's racist. Now, I think he is racist, and we've actually proven that through a variety of things. He's been sued for housing discrimination. He had to settle out of court, and he settled because there was, quote, overwhelming evidence that indeed he did do housing discrimination. He was on the birther thing forever, so on and so forth. We can go on and on. He's a bigot, anti-Muslim bigot. You kick out, don't let in 1.6 billion people. So he is a bigot. But your responses need to align with what the charge is. So when he says, hey, I want to keep jobs here, America first, this and that, it is not a rational thing to say, but bigot. No, you got to say, hold on now, I don't think you're going to do that. Here's why I don't think you're going to do that. Here's why we're better for the economy. And the Democrats have not done a good job making their case, because they've gotten lazy in how they respond. So I'm here to tell you guys, beware the American Brexit. Because everybody thought, well, what do you mean the Remain camp is going to win? Clearly. And the Leave won. And the Leave won fairly handily. So now I'm not saying that's going to happen in the U.S., but I'm saying be cognizant of it, be aware of it, and understand that it ain't over till it's over. So there's your fair warning. Okay. Now, let's get to more specific stuff here. Talk about Donald Trump and the market. Donald Trump has been causing a wild reaction in the market recently. When we got the news about Hillary's emails last week, yet again with FBI Director Comey's letter to Congress, everything tanked. Everything went down. So CNBC reports here, Wall Street's long-running view that Hillary Clinton would easily become the next president has been replaced by a new fear that Donald Trump could win. And it probably won't be a pretty picture for stocks if he does. Bond yields have moved lower, and so have stocks, as the markets have begun to react to the possibility of a Trump victory in the last several days. The S&P 500 Wednesday was off 13 points at the key support level of 2097 and was down 1.3% for the week so far. Okay, so you might be thinking, well, why would the market react negatively? Typically, Republican presidents are beloved by the rich and by the financial markets. Well, that's true, but Trump is a different case. Now, as I've argued before, Hillary Clinton, this is the first election of my lifetime for sure, that the Democratic Party clearly represents a bigger establishment insider than the Republican Party and the Republican candidate. You definitely have an outsider in Donald Trump and an anti-establishment character in Donald Trump. Now, unfortunately, he's anti-establishment in all the wrong ways. But he is anti-establishment in that, the people want business as usual and they want the status quo, and they know they're more likely to get that with Hillary Clinton than with Donald Trump. So the market is saying, whoa. You want to talk about uncertainty. I've heard people make arguments about uncertainty in the marketplace, and it's just been sheer bullshit. But this is a specific time where when somebody brings up uncertainty, you could just see how that clearly makes sense with Donald Trump, because people go, what the fuck is this guy going to do if he wins? And I also love how silly it is that at this late date, they're like, maybe this guy's going to win. Yeah, no shit. I mean, I predicted only three contests into the Republican primary that it would be a minor miracle if Trump didn't win. the primary, to be clear. But I said at the beginning of the general, too, oh, you think he has no shot? You're fucking clueless. You said all along he had no shot in the primary, and he won. And, in fact, he was up in the polls the entire time, so the fact that you didn't see it is beyond ridiculous. You know, same thing here. I mean, he's been down in the polls, but he's making a late surge. He's making a late surge because of that email announcement, among many other things, and all Hillary scandals. Not saying Trump doesn't have scandals. He does. But they're both really disliked, so he's in this thing, and he has a shot. So the same thing happened with the predictions for Brexit, where people were like, no, the Remain camp is going to win handily. And then that didn't happen. In fact, the opposite happened. The Leave camp won fairly handily. So, I mean, this is where we're at right now. But this may be one of very, very few instances where I think the establishment, if you will, actually has a point. And you're probably thinking, oh, come on, Kyle. Your whole thing is being anti-establishment, and your whole thing is that we got to overturn the system. Oh, for sure. But the ideas matter in terms of what you implement after you overturn the system. And in the case of Donald Trump, he overturns it, and he doesn't know what he's doing. He's basically the equivalent of a monkey throwing his feces. So, again, you go, that's not fair. Well, here's why and by the way, 370 economists have come out and said anybody but Trump. 370. So here's why 370 economists are like, don't do it. And why, the financial markets are like, oh God. Here's why. Because Trump, during the campaign, said this, quote, I'm the king of debt. I'm great with debt. Nobody knows debt better than me. I've made a fortune by using debt, and if things don't work out, I renegotiate the debt. I mean, that's a smart thing, not a stupid thing. You go back and you say, hey, guess what? The economy crashed. I'm going to give you back half. So do you understand that? He's saying, I'm going to make a deal on U.S. debt, and I ain't going to pay it all back. Okay, if you admit that and acknowledge that and let that be known, we are talking worldwide financial crash. The dollar is the world reserve currency. Everything rests on the dollar being stable and solid and the word of the United States government being good. Donald Trump is saying, no, I'm going to come out there and say it's not stable, it's not solid, and our word is not good. That will be something the world has never seen. A crash and a downturn that quick. I mean, you're talking effects as bad as the Great Depression, maybe worse. So you have people, the experts, the economists, like, oh no, he thinks the world economy is like one of his shitty businesses. Remember, he went bankrupt, he went through business bankruptcy 6 times. Now, what did he do when that was the case? Well, it's the old trick. It's actually, to be fair, it's the same as the Mitt Romney trick with Bain Capital. Now, Mitt Romney was smart enough to know you can't do this with the country. But the idea is, okay, file for bankruptcy, fuck over everybody, all the workers, and then I run out the back door with all the money because liability is limited in my case. So he views the world economy in that same way, and that's not – you can't – do that. And the thing about Trump is he just might be arrogant enough to say, no, I know what I'm doing. This is what I'm going to do. Believe me. We got to start fresh, and this is the best way to start fresh. Declare the U.S. insolvent, make a deal, and then move along here. No. Don't do that. And actually, you could go one of two ways, to be fair to Donald Trump. Either you have Donald Trump ends up being, if he's elected, the most establishment president ever. Because, you know, he has a track record of the last person in the room, whatever that person says to him, all right, let's do that, because he's a fool. And that was actually the same thing for George W. Bush in many respects, too. Cheney was the last one in the room, famously, and he was like, I got an idea. I'll be your VP. Bush was like, all right, Dick, I like that. You got my Legos laying around here? So with Trump, it's a similar thing. Now, he's surrounded himself with a lot of scary people on foreign policy. John Bolton, the world's worst neocon, maybe even worse than Dick Cheney. So he surrounded himself with ultra uber establishment people who would also be really bad for the economy. Either he's totally establishment or totally anti-establishment and an arrogant strongman, And he says, no, I'm going to override all of it and do what I want. And then he crashes the economy that way. Either way, it's not good. Either way, you're going in a crazy far-right Republican slash neocon direction, or you're going in Trump's backwards mind that it hasn't thought this stuff through and doesn't know anything about it direction. So that's why you have the markets going, whoa, 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 not Trump, not Trump. Now, again, I have argued, and I still argue to this day, what happens in the marketplace is not a great reflection of the overall economic well-being for your average Joe in the country. So there's a difference there. There's a disconnect. The market is not, you know, when you look at the stock market, it's not an overall reflection of regular people. But when we're talking about decisions that could be that disastrous where you have a crash, then it affects everybody. And that's not something that should be an option. But with Donald Trump, there's that uncertainty in the market that's a real uncertainty where people are going, shit, fuck, even Hillary over this guy. So we'll see what happens, but we are already seeing the signs. Whenever Trump, oh, shit, Trump might be leading, boom, market goes down. And in this case, it's for a good reason. Okay. All right, next. So we have some great things coming up on direct ballot initiative in various states on Election Day, and I wanted to give people a heads up about it. So Huffington Post explains here, voters in Arizona, Colorado, Maine, and Washington State will head to the polls next week to determine whether they should hike their state minimum wages. In the case of Arizona and Washington, voters will also decide whether to guarantee paid sick days for workers. All right, now we've also discussed how I think it's five different states that are considering legalizing recreational marijuana. So it could be, look, this is one of the elections where it could be the snowball effect and there's no turning back. So, I mean, you know, when California falls and they have full-out legal marijuana, there's no putting that cat back in the bag. Is that the saying? Cat back in the bag? I don't know. It's a weird saying. But there is still the dichotomy and the problem of the federal government and, you know, the laws of the federal government not being the same as what it is in these more liberal states on the issue of marijuana. And we have the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution, which means that the federal law overrides state law. So you still have that problem that marijuana is a Schedule I drug, and you're just relying on the discretion of the president to not crack down on not only legal marijuana in terms of recreational marijuana, but also medical marijuana. If you get a sufficiently assholish president, a President Trump or Chris Christie, they could theoretically just say, I'm shutting it all down, and they have the authority to do it, and there's no recourse. You could argue till you're blue in the face, but the state laws allow me to do it. Doesn't matter. Federal laws are against it. Federal law overrides state law. So, but the point is, when you get to a certain point, the mood in the country, the feeling in the country, the opinions of the people are so overwhelming in the direction of it is what it is now, you can't roll it back, that it would be hard for a president to say, I'm just going to crack down on it. They'd have the legal authority to do so, but they might not want to do it for their own ass. So, and I can't wait to get to that point. We got to get to that point. I want legal marijuana in all these different states, and then I'd love to see legal marijuana at a federal level. I love to, at the very least, decriminalize the other drugs, too, at the very least. So this is a big election in that respect, man, and we don't talk about that enough. I mean, we often talk about how there's nothing but disastrous choices for the presidency. Well, that's not fair. I don't think Jill is a disastrous choice, but let's face it, it's either going to be Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton that wins. But so between those two candidates, it's a disaster, and we're all upset about it. Any reasonable person is upset about it. But when it comes to direct ballot initiative, it's the opposite. I mean, it's a lovely day in that respect. You have all these, okay, legal recreational marijuana, like I just said, raising the minimum wage in this place and that place and guaranteeing paid sick days. And what I love about this is here we have real democracy, and here we've set up a way to go around the corruption of the government. So with a direct ballot initiative, you do the legwork, you know, you meet the barriers, or you meet the bar, whatever, however the saying goes. I got some weird sayings today, don't I? And you can achieve it. So you have enough workers, enough people in unions get together and try to fight to get these things on the ballot, and they succeed, and then the people vote on it, and guess what? I mean, it, across the board, it's the case that when you put a liberal idea on a direct ballot initiative, without fail, unless there's massive amounts of corporate money flowing in the other direction to deceive people on that ballot initiative, the liberal position is going to win. Because guess what? It's overwhelmingly popular. I mean, all across the U.S., 80% of the American people say, yeah, raise the minimum wage. What are we, stupid? $7.25? You can't live on that. So 80% of the country believes that. You go to these states, the yes, raise the minimum wage is winning across the board. I'm not sure there's a single poll where it's down. Paid family leave, I don't know the details on that one, but that's another one where when you poll people in the entire country, they go, yeah, paid sick leave. Every other, well, I don't know if they know that every other modern nation has it, but it's something that just feels right. Of course you should be able to get paid sick leave. What are we, crazy? The year is 2016. You got to have some time off. You got to have, you know, if you're sick, it should be law that, you know, for a certain amount of time, you get paid. So this is good stuff here, man. And I just wanted to remind everybody, Arizona, Colorado, Maine, and Washington, Washington State, you'll be voting on a direct ballot initiative on raising the minimum wage. Some states it's $12, which many economists say is a living wage, by the way. Fight for 15 is something that's also great, but $12 is what many economists say is a living wage. And that's what's on the ballot in these states. And it's by, I think, 2020 in most cases. So it's over time they raise it to that. But $12 in some cases. In other cases, it's, I think, $13.50 in one of the states. And we can make the country a better country if these direct ballot initiatives win, if the legalization of marijuana, recreational marijuana in the different states win. So anybody who thinks, this is where I really disagree with people. There are some people on the left who just say, I'm just not going to vote. Russell Brand was famously going around saying, I don't think anybody should vote. Thank you very much. Shut the fuck up, you moron. That's not true. So, and look, I'm somebody, I'm in New York, a safe state. I'm not choosing between the lesser of two evils because I have the luxury of not having to do that. So I'm going to vote for Jill Stein for president. But that's my point is, even if you go and do what's considered a protest vote, go and do your fucking protest vote. Have your voice be heard. And by the way, if the Green Party gets to 5%, they get what's called matching funds, where the government gives them $10 million for, you know, future elections. So there's an upside to it, and you should be voting regardless of who you vote for. Yes, vote, 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 vote. There's always going to be somebody who most aligns with your views in the election. So vote, vote, and then outside of that, like I just described for you, there's some very important direct ballot initiatives. You think you don't make a difference? You could raise the minimum wage for people and lift them out of poverty, literally. Yes, you make a difference. Yes, go vote. Don't listen to anybody who says don't vote. I'm not going to tell you how to vote. I'm not going to force you to vote lesser of two evils. I think that's wrong, but I do think you should vote. That's a no-brainer. Okay. All right, let me take a break. When we come back, I got a story coming out of Politico about the plans of the far right on Election Day. And then we have the Hillary camp is out with a new ad to try to get millennials to vote for her. And you won't be surprised to hear my take on it. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
I think that you know.
Me that the thing, the show wasn't coming through for the first 11 minutes or so. Yeah, Blog Talk Radio doing their thing. So if you, I guess all of you missed the introduction. I don't know if it'll store later and you would be able to listen to the beginning later. I really don't know. But anyway, I'll just real quick repeat what I was saying. Tomorrow I'm going to do something special. Instead of the normal live show, obviously, which you're listening to right now, I'm going to take the political I Stand With quiz. And you know, I'm going to – you won't be able to listen to it live, but it'll go up directly when I'm done. No cuts, no edits, just me ranting for however long it takes, probably anywhere between an hour and maybe 2 hours and 30 minutes. It's a super long quiz that gets into a lot of detail on all the different political issues, and I'm going to go in and give every little fucking nook and cranny in my brain and what I think about it, and then at the end of it you see not only who you agree with and who you should be voting for in the election, but what percentage you agree with that person. So I'm going to go through that. It's got all the third-party options, yada, yada, you know, and then it compares with previous elections. You could do all this stuff. So anyway, it's fun. And so what will happen is I'll take it, throw it up there, and it's not just going to be me. You're not just going to see me talking about it. You're going to, you know, see the screen and all the different questions, and I'll go through it. So anyway, so a little special thing tomorrow as opposed to the regular show, doing it because obviously the election is very soon. So figured I'd take that quiz for everybody, throw it up there. That's that. Okay, so we have now a story coming out of Politico that is really important and, yes, really scary. There's a story out in Politico yesterday about the plans of the far right on Election Day, and it's not good. So they say, neo-Nazi leader Andrew Anglin plans to muster thousands of poll watchers across all 50 states. His partners at the alt-right website, The Right Stuff, are touting plans to set up hidden cameras at polling places in Philadelphia, and hand out liquor and marijuana in the city's ghetto on election day to induce residents to stay home. The National Socialist Movement, various factions of the Ku Klux Klan, and the White Nationalist American Freedom Party all are deploying members to watch polls either informally or, they say, through the Trump campaign. The Oath Keepers, a group of former law enforcement and military members that often shows up in public heavily armed, is advising members to go undercover and conduct intelligence gathering at polling places. Wow. So what we have here is the rock has been overturned and the insects are scurrying all over the place. And lest you think these people aren't serious, and yes, I'm aware that lest is a weird word, we just had a story from this week about how a black church in Mississippi was burned, and on the building they wrote, "So they're mobilizing and they're coming out of the woodworks and it ain't pretty." This dark underbelly of U.S. politics, which has always been around, but for a long time had been kind of, you know, in the shadows, and I'm talking about the real extremist groups, KKK, neo-Nazis, white nationalists, they really are, you know, just coming out and saying, here we are, and we ain't going anywhere, and we got a candidate who we support now. In fact, the KKK newspaper, which, by the way, I didn't even know I had a newspaper, they endorsed Donald Trump. Now, it's not surprising that they would support Donald Trump, but what's surprising is they feel emboldened enough to write it in a paper and show the world and act like, well, this, we don't even think this is going to bring him down because we think everybody's coming out of the shadows now and we're no longer the pariah that we used to be. I mean, David Duke participated in the Louisiana Senate debate yesterday at a historically black college. This is where we're at, man. So it's happened. It's happened. Now, I've been perhaps overly kind to Trump supporters in continuing to bring up the fact that there are a lot of his supporters who just hate the establishment. And like Michael Moore has said, they view him as a human Molotov cocktail that they're going to throw through the window of the establishment. And when he goes out there and says, I'm against the TPP, look, America first, let's rebuild the infrastructure, let's not do all these wars. When he says stuff like that, people go, oh, he's looking out for me. So there's an economic angle to it as well, and people are struggling. That's still true. But what's also true is there are people who are really, really attracted to the other stuff he says. The stuff that we all look at, reasonable people look at, and they go, wow, that's bad. So, for example, when he says, let's ban all Muslims from coming to the U.S., a complete and total shutdown of Muslims coming to the U.S., he just banned 1.6 billion people like that. That's what he announced it. Yeah, let's keep all Muslims out. Well, when, so there are some people who, when they hear that, they go, yes, that's exactly what I want to hear. When Trump says, hey, I want to kick out all undocumented immigrants, all of them, all over 11 million of them. Doesn't matter if you worked here for 20 years and you're, you know, all you do is look after your family and you do pay your taxes. By the way, undocumented immigrants pay $11 billion in taxes every year. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. I want you to get the fuck out of here. And let's be clear, I'm not talking about Hans and Franz and other, you know, immigrants. I'm talking about, you know who I'm talking about. I'm not trying to round up the Canadians and ship them away. And, I mean, look, it was clear when he said, when he launched his campaign, that the Mexicans, they're coming in here, they're criminals, they're rapists. I assume some are good people. So no, he flipped it. Notice that. It's not, hey, some are criminals and rapists, but most are good people. He flipped it. They're coming in here, they're criminals, they're rapists. I assume some are good people. So that's something where you're going to have white nationalists hear that. They had the fucking, just this week, in Utah, because Evan McMullen, an independent Mormon candidate, was doing well in the polls there and he could win Utah, white nationalists were doing robocalls for Donald Trump. This was unheard of not that long ago. But now they're coming out of the shadows because they think, I think more people agree with me than I thought agreed with me. So now I'm going to endorse candidates and push for candidates, and I don't think it's going to hurt them. Because I think we're onto a movement here, and the movement is openly bigoted. So we're at a bad place in that respect. What they're talking about here is armed far right Trump supporters going to urban areas and intimidating voters and doing it under the guise of we're just making sure there's no voter fraud. Okay, we covered the studies on the show. There was one case of voter fraud in the news recently. You know who did it? A Trump supporter. But look, that's even that point is irrelevant because the overall studies on this have shown that between the year 2000 and 2014, with a billion votes cast, a billion, how many instances of in-person voter fraud were there? 14. There's a better chance of somebody getting struck by lightning twice than there being in-person voter fraud. That's what the odds are. But these people, KKK, neo-Nazis, white nationalists, are going to show up in predominantly black areas with guns to make sure, we're going to make sure nobody does voter fraud here. No, well, you're armed and you're intimidating them, and what you're trying to do is suppress the vote. So we're at a bad spot, man. Look, I do think there is an angle of Hillary got a lot of shit for saying, the Trump supporters are deplorables. But actually, people didn't dive into the nuance of the point that she made. Everyone knows I'm no Hillary fan. I rip her literally on a daily basis. Literally. I think she's super corrupt. But what she said is about half of Donald Trump supporters are genuinely hurt by the economy and they've fallen behind and they don't know where to turn. And so they go to this guy who's not the right answer, but they turn to him because they feel like maybe he is because he sounds like a straight shooter. So they're hurting economically and they want answers. So they turn to extremes. That's half his supporters. The other half are the basket of deplorables who are just bigoted and racist and sexist and homophobic and blah, 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 blah. That's not a crazy thing to say. Look at the polling data. Now, she still maybe overstated it a little bit, but, for example, what is it, 59% of Trump supporters think Obama's Kenyan? 59%! That is beyond stupid, and at this point, if you think that with all the evidence in the other direction, I do think you're a bigot. Because why else would you, I don't know, well, he's a Democrat and he's black, so he's got to be a foreigner. He's from Kenya. Okay, at this point, with all of the evidence, all the data, short-form birth certificate, long-form birth certificate, newspaper clipping that's the announcement in the Hawaii newspaper when he was born in Hawaii, if you still say after all that, yeah, he's Kenyan. Well, I think I know why you're saying that. What is it? 65% say he's Muslim? If that's not deplorable, what the fuck is deplorable? Because you only say these things because he's a black Democrat. You never said Bill Clinton might be a Muslim. You never said Bill Clinton might be a Kenyan. So why for Obama specifically are those the things? Because you're fucking bigots. But look, what I'm here to do is just tell you, wear it on your sleeve. At least I know that these guys are what they are, and they say they are what they are. I think what annoys me more is the people who are like, I'm not that. Don't call me bigoted. Even though we have a Kenyan Muslim president, and I still want to see his birth certificate, and even though we've shown his birth certificate a million times, and it's like Trump, I want to see his college records after he's proven sufficiently he's a citizen. Okay, what the fuck do you want me to call you? What do you want me to call you? Donald Trump was sued repeatedly for housing discrimination against blacks. They had a system where they'd put C for colored in the book, and they wouldn't allow them in the buildings. Now, you say, well, he wasn't convicted of that. He settled out of court because there was, quote, overwhelming evidence that indeed he did do housing discrimination against black people. No, don't call me bigot. Don't call him bigoted. Don't call me a bigot. Don't call him bigoted. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Maybe you're the bigot for accurately calling me a bigot. Maybe you're the bigot. Stop with the childish games. Just admit what you are. Some people are refusing to admit it. At least these guys admit it. But now we know the enemy we're up against. And fucking neo-Nazis going to do poll watching with guns? KKK poll watching with guns? You know, we do have names for these groups, neo-Nazis and KKK people. Yet they're terrorist groups. They accept violence for political reasons. What's the definition of terrorism? Violence for political reasons. That's the definition of terrorism. What is the exact definition? Violence for political or religious reasons. That's terrorism. So these guys are – now they're saying, hey, we're just going to show up with the guns. We're not going to do violence. But these groups have a history of being violent. So who's going to watch the watchers? That's what they say. Oh, we're the poll watchers. That's what we are. No, no, no. This should be diligently taken care of by police officers. They should be there to make sure, look, man, you have a right to go anywhere and do whatever you want. But the second you start directly threatening people, the second you start doing physical altercations, voter intimidation, well, look, we're going to have to ameliorate this issue because that's unacceptable. So it is, I do feel it is strange how Trump has mustered up many people based on genuine economic populism in his rhetoric. I don't think he's actually going to fix anything, but that's his rhetoric. So he's understandably garnered up support in that respect. But then let's not pretend like a lot of it isn't just based on the bigotry and the hatred and the xenophobia. Because now we know, when you're organizing to this extent, you got neo-Nazis and KKK guys and Oath Keepers and militia people, and you know they're all coming together and they're admitting what they're coming together for. Well, then don't get mad at me, the messenger, for saying, oh, hey, you guys are a bunch of bigots. Get mad at them for being the bigots. Unless, of course, you agree with them. Let me take a sip real fast of my drink. All right, let's go to Tom DeLay. Former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay has some thoughts on how Republicans should deal with a President Hillary Clinton. Let's watch.
So what kind of country would we be living in starting in January if Hillary wins under these circumstances?
I would start impeachment hearings immediately, whether she's pardoned or not.
If you were in the House?
You bet. Absolutely. You can't have a criminal serving in the White House as President of the United States and Commander in Chief. It's impossible. So let's try her in the Senate.
Well, okay. Now, first of all, do you think Paul Ryan and company would have the guts to do that? And then do you think there's no way? I mean, the Republicans aren't going to increase their margin in the Senate anyway, and you know what, that they would get 60 votes to convict? Or 60, well, whatever they need to get 66 votes to convict, whatever. Go ahead.
That's all speculative. We knew we didn't have the votes to convict in the Senate, but we impeached Clinton anyway, because we knew that it was our responsibility to do so. And you can't. The President of the United States is not above the rule of law. And if there's no other route, then the House has to act. And yes, I think they do have the guts to impeach Clinton if the American people demand it.
Impeachment on day one. Don't even wait for anything to be done in office. Just day one, impeachment. Oh, that is cute. That is cute. That is cute. The best part of that is Tom fucking DeLay, a Republican majority leader during the Bush era, saying, and I quote, "The president is not above the law." Indeed, sir, indeed. This guy was in there during Bush. Hey, fuckhead, where were you when this guy set up a worldwide torture regime? Where were you when this guy tortured innocent people? Where were you when this guy set up Guantanamo Bay? Where were you when he violated international law repeatedly in a variety of different ways? Where were you when he waged an offensive war against a country that didn't attack us, and then when we learned that is indeed what he did, continued to occupy that country? You know, the president's not above the law unless the president's in my party, in which case we're going to act like they're above the law and not call them out on obvious violations of the law. But yeah, Hillary Clinton, day one, day one. Look, I despise Hillary Clinton. Everybody knows I despise Hillary Clinton. But the only way to get me to defend Hillary Clinton is to put people as stupid and even more corrupt, like Tom DeLay, against her. So go ahead, Tom DeLay, the more you run your mouth, the more you're actually circling the wagons on the left to get behind somebody who's terrible like Hillary Clinton, because you're worse. You're such an insane, over-the-top hypocrite that I can't help but hate you even more. Who says that? You were the majority leader during the Bush administration, and you're going to say no president is above the law. No, I agree. Where the fuck were you when it was your party, you asshole? Because it's only when it's the other party. Ah, when they do it. Oh, fuck, man. Now we're going to go after you. Now we're going to go after you. But when it's on my team, I'm Team Red. Yay, Team Red. So cover it up. Don't talk about it. Certainly don't impeach. Don't do proceedings. None of that stuff. So these guys are not principled. Don't buy into the bullshit. And you heard him. Impeachment day one. I'm not going to wait for anything to happen in office. Impeachment day one. Well, thank you for letting us know what your real agenda is, and thank you for letting us know how you're going to move forward in this wildly, incredibly hypocritical direction. All right, let's go to President Obama. President Obama was on the campaign trail for Hillary Clinton in North Carolina. Let's see what he had to say.
I want to speak not just to Democrats. I want to speak to Republicans here in North Carolina as well. You know, look, I am obviously a partisan Democrat. I understand that, but we're not Democrats or Republicans first. We're Americans first. And there's certain standards of behavior that we should expect out of our leaders. I've got Republican friends who don't think or act the way Donald Trump does. This is somebody who is uniquely unqualified. I ran against John McCain. I ran against Mitt Romney. I thought I'd be a better president. But I never thought that the Republic was at risk if they were elected. And guess what, North Carolina? The good news is, all of you are uniquely qualified to make sure that who's uniquely unqualified does not become president. You just got to vote.
Of all the Democratic arguments that annoy me that have been used this election, I think this is number one. Because they either don't understand the damaging effects of this argument, or they do, and they're fine with the effects of this argument. Because what they're saying is, Donald Trump is uniquely bad, uniquely evil, uniquely wrong, and the other Republicans, kind of reasonable and we could work with. Okay, but that's not true. That's nowhere near true. And what happens when you act on that assumption? The Overton window, which is the spectrum of respectable political debate among the establishment, that creeps further and further right. Because you just said, hey man, we only don't like Trump. John McCain, Mitt Romney, you know, House Republicans, Senate Republicans, well, I mean, they're not nearly as bad. In fact, I like some of them. Some of them are reasonable. Maybe we could work with them. If you're going to work with the Republicans, you ain't working on Republicans to get liberal priorities accomplished now, are you? You're working with Republicans to get right-wing things accomplished. Because whenever Republicans compromise, it ain't because they agree with you. It's because you agree with them if you're an establishment Democrat. So that's a really insidious argument. That's not okay. Oh, yeah, McCain, Romney, you know what? They weren't that bad. I mean, the Republic wasn't, you know, threatened. But Trump, so bad, so bad, so bad. Hold on, ready for this? How about I blow your mind? In some ways, Donald Trump is worse than those guys, sure. The other guys were coded in their bigotry. Donald Trump wears it on his sleeve. You know, Donald Trump is way more ignorant than them. He said stuff like, give Saudi Arabia nuclear weapons. Oh! So in some ways, Trump is worse, sure. In some ways, he's better than Mitt Romney and John McCain. Oh, did I just say, did I hurt your Democratic establishment feelings? No, but it's true. So, for example, Donald Trump said during the primary, and he continues to say it now, I'm not going to cut Social Security. I'm not going to cut Social Security. I'm not going to cut Medicare. I'm not going to do it. People paid into it. I'm not going to cut it. GOP establishment wisdom. But Trump is right, and they're wrong, and they only want to make a deal on Social Security and Medicare to hand more of the money over to Wall Street and to the private insurance companies. So they're doing it for corrupt reasons. So Trump is better on Social Security. He's better with his rhetoric on trade deals. I think when push comes to shove, he'd probably end up passing one version or another of a trade deal because he's outsourced his own job to Turkey and Bangladesh and Mexico. So the idea that he's principled on this and China, it's just not true. He's not principled on it. But look, his rhetoric is right when he swings against TPP. I don't see establishment Republicans doing that. Establishment Republicans love TPP. When he talks about infrastructure, he did this in the debate too. Yeah, I want to spend money here at home. I don't want to fight as many wars. I'd rather take the money and spend it here to rebuild our country. America first. You know, people got mad at me. Hey, don't use that because America first was linked to an old white nationalist movement. So they said America First is, it's got a bad history to it. On the one hand, okay, true, and he does have white nationalist supporters, so there's a genuine concern there of kind of in bed with them. But on the other hand, if you disconnect it from the history it's connected to and you just listen, America First, well, if you're running for president of the United States of America, that appears to be what common sense should be. But we don't have that. So, for example, we're spending a shitload of money. We just gave $38 billion to Israel so they can continue occupation and expansion and apartheid. And meanwhile, we can't get clean water in Flint. So do I want to see America First in that respect? Not tied to any fucking white nationalist shit, but America First in that, yeah, take the money and spend it here. Yes, I want to see that. So when Trump hits these issues and bucks Republican orthodoxy, he's better than John McCain and fucking Mitt Romney. Now, again, overall, I guess it's a fair point to say, you know, with the threats to the First Amendment and other things, okay, well, it's still too much of a gamble and you shouldn't roll the dice on it. But when Obama repeatedly makes the argument the other ones are okay, he's bad, well, then what he's doing is he's just, you know, solidifying what the Bernie supporters have thought all along, which is you have this establishment that the Democrats are in and the Republicans are in, and they're going to do things that look after the establishment and benefit the establishment and their corporate donors. And if somebody's viewed as outside of that, whether they're a good person or a bad person, well, they're the problem. Establishment good, non-establishment bad. That's what I get out of what he's saying there. Now, I know some people might say, well, you're nitpicking. Like somebody tweeted at me the other day, and they're like, Kyle, you're mad at this, but this is just a standard, like, you know, persuasion technique. You say, well, come on, the other party, maybe we'll get some crossover voters if, hey, we're kind of with you, but he's the bad one. You're not as bad as him, are you? Like, but that's, okay, but what I care about, I want principled politicians who push for what their policy ideas are. I don't like this idea of, like, let me use these techniques and tactics to try to get these crossover voters. Because in the process, the Democrats are doing what they always do, snubbing their base. So even best case scenario of, oh, he doesn't mean that, he's just using a tactic, I still don't like it. Don't use fucking shitty tactics. So I don't know. It just annoys me when, and Hillary's made this argument repeatedly too. Her advisors warned her, don't make that argument. She made the argument. You know, the other ones you can work with, John McCain, Mitt Romney, so on and so forth, but Trump, so bad. No, but you just normalize the extremism of the other Republicans by saying maybe they're not so bad. So now the bar for reasonable is anything but Trump. I don't agree with that bar. I think he's super unreasonable when you take all of his beliefs. I think Mitt Romney and John McCain are super unreasonable. I think you're super unreasonable given the things you've done, establishment Democrats. Expanded NSA spying, continued to bomb 7 different countries. List goes on and on. So you're all unreasonable as far as I'm concerned, and I want to drag the spectrum back to the left. And here our Democratic president isn't helping. He's hurting. He's making the spectrum go further right by saying, the other Republicans are not so bad. Yes, they are. Jesus, I felt like that segment, that block went super quick. All right, let me take a break. When we come back, the Hillary camp is out with a new ad to try and court millennial voters, and James Franco's in it. Oh, no. And then we got the Alabama Secretary of State basically admitting he's not a fan of democracy. Oh, that's such a sad story. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Full of liquor, then you dive in. I wave a few bottles down. the girls want to play, they watch. I got a swimming pool full of liquor and they dive in it. Pool full of liquor, I'ma dive in it. Frank.
Head shot.
Frank.
Sit down.
Frank.
Stand up.
Frank.
Pass out.
Frank.
Wake up.
Frank.
Fade it.
Frank.
Fade it.
Frank. Okay. Now open your mind up and listen to me, Kendrick. I'm in your conscience. If you do not hear me, then you will be history, Kendrick. I know that you're nauseous right now, and I'm hoping to lead you to victory, Kendrick.
If I take another one down, I'ma drown in some poison, abuse on my limit. I think that I'm feeling the vibe. I see the love in her eyes. I see the feeling of freedom is granted as soon as the damage of vodka arrived. This how you capitalize. This is parental advice. And apparently, I'm over influenced by what you are doing. I thought I was doing the most, and someone said to me,
nigga, why you babysitting? Only two or three shots. I'ma show you how to turn it up a notch. First you hit a swimming pool full of liquor, then you dive in it. Pool full of liquor, then you dive in it. I wave a few bottles and I watch them all fly. All the girls wanna play, they watch. I got a swimming pool full of liquor and they dive in it. Pool full of liquor, I'ma dive in it. Frank.
Headshot.
Frank.
Sit down.
Frank.
Stand up.
Frank.
Pass out.
Frank.
Wake up.
Frank.
Fade it.
Frank.
Fade it.
Frank.
Alright, you ride. Bang. One chopper, 100 shots. Bang. Hop out. Do you? Bang. Two chopper, 200 shots. Bang. Alright, you ride. Bang. One chopper, 100 shots. Bang. Hop out. I'ma show you how to turn it up a notch. First you get a swimming pool full of liquor, then you dive in it. Pool full of liquor, then you dive in it. I wave a few bottles and I watch them all fly. All the girls wanna play, they watch. I got a swimming pool full of liquor and they dive in it. Pool full of liquor, I'ma dive in it.
Frank.
Headshot.
Frank.
Sit down.
Frank.
Stand up.
Frank.
Pass out.
Frank.
Wake up.
Frank.
Fade it.
Frank.
Fade it.
Frank.
Feel it.
Catch a fire. Fired up. Corrupt. Burning it up. It's burning hot. Drifting, hitting every side. With a dropkick. It's toxic. Trouble like you're building a mosh pit. I lost it. And that's the only way that we rock shit. Banging heads and ripping.
Son of a bitch. Alright, y'all. Alright, let's move right along to some, I don't know, this gets under my skin still. Am I too curmudgeonly on this stuff? Some people might say yes at this point. The Hillary camp is out with a new ad here to try and court millennial voters. Let's watch.
She didn't just bring Iran to the table. She whittled the table from a single piece of oak. Her laugh is in the skin of Sony. Yoda was her apprentice. She's the most interesting woman in the world. I don't always endorse candidates, but when I do, they're extraordinary. Vote wisely, my friends.
Kill me. Shoot me in the face. I can't. Look, that makes me so sad because it doesn't give millennials the respect of assuming they can care or think about serious issues that affect them. Hey, let's make it like the Dos Equis commercial and put a half-naked James Franco in there, and there's no losing this election. Oh, God, what do you think of us? But that's the thing, like, they look down on us when it's ads like this that makes us look down on them, and rightfully so. Okay, you want to know what millennials care about? They care about student loan debt. And you want to know what they care about? They care about affordable health care. You want to know what they care about? They care about stopping all these wars. And again, so you might say, Kyle, you're just listening off the shit that you care about. No, no, no. Look at the polls. Millennials are incredibly progressive. In fact, if you look at the country overall, we're actually very progressive. They don't tell you that in the mainstream media, but Bernie Sanders' agenda, when you go issue by issue, polls off the charts well. But millennials, it's even more so. Millennials are not even close. I mean, this generation is just incredibly progressive. So they care about these issues. And as one of Hillary's staffers warned her in an internal email that we got from WikiLeaks, what did they say? Hillary, pump your brakes with this kind of stuff because I think it was the line was millennials have a fine-tuned detector for political BS or something to that effect. And when I watch this, I go, yeah, oh, my meter broke watching that one. Meter was like, fail, and break. Because that's what it is, man. I don't, like, who are you appealing to? Who are you appealing to? Who's going to watch that and go, you know, I learned a lot about her policies. And the one policy she did mention, they did the goofy thing about she didn't just bring Iran to the table. She whittled the table out of wood or, I don't know, something like that. The one policy thing they mentioned about, oh, her, the core of it was what? Oh, she negotiated this deal with Iran or she, you know, got them to the table. Bullshit. Bullshit. Because in 2008, in the first primary against Obama, there was a big story that broke as a result of Hillary Clinton calling President Obama, at the time Barack Obama, Senator Obama, naive because Obama said, I will talk to Iran without preconditions. In other words, he says, look, they're our enemy, but what are we going to do? You want to make a deal? You want to try to negotiate? You want to be peaceful? You got to sit down at the table with them. Duh. So yes, I will negotiate with them without preconditions, and we'll try to get some deal. Hillary said, that's naive. Don't do that. So if Hillary was president for Obama's term, we would have never even sat down and spoken to Iran because Obama's the one who said without preconditions. Hillary's the one who said, no, I will have conditions. Well, how do we know they would have met the conditions? We don't know that. So perhaps we wouldn't have the deal that now she's fucking taking credit for. Even in your goofy, fucking, shitty millennial outreach ad that is pedantic and condescending to the max, you botch the one policy thing you brought up. This is why we don't fucking like you. You know, she referenced Pokemon at a rally. Did I go up with millennials 3 points? That's what everybody calculated would happen if I brought up the Pokemons. I like Zima, and I want to use the hula hoops and maybe dance the Macarena with you. I like the show Full House because I hear that when the millennials were younger, they liked that. And Saved by the Bell, Zach Morris is a cutie, isn't he? Weird how Bernie Sanders got the overwhelming majority of millennial support when Bernie Sanders, I don't think, uttered a single sentence that wasn't about policy substance during the entire campaign. I mean, that guy, when he was asked a question about policy substance, he would answer with, like, 3 different policy things. So he couldn't shut the fuck up about policy. And the Hillary camp is still looking at it like, I don't get it. Why is he doing so well? Is it because he's older than me? Should I act older? Should I talk like this? What should I do? I don't get it. I mean, should I say I'm Jewish? Is that why they like him? What's going on here? No, it's about the policy. You never got that. You never did get that. This is further proof. Okay. All right, let's keep going. Some important foreign policy stuff. Boy, do I have an important story here for you, and so far I've seen literally no outlet cover it save one outlet. So Business Insider deserves the credit for this one. They explain here. Defense officials at the Pentagon say they need to up to $500 million. Excuse me. Wow, how did I botch that? Defense officials at the Pentagon say they need up to $500 million more to finish the development phase for the F-35, the troubled fifth-generation fighter that's already gone 50% over its original budget. The F-35 program office requested the money last month to the Defense Acquisition Board. Its overall lifetime budget has ballooned to more than $1.5 trillion, making it the most expensive weapon system ever built by the U.S. They spent, the overall lifetime budget has ballooned to more than $1.5 trillion, and now they're saying, going to need like $500 million more. What are you going to do? How am I going to feed my kids on $1.5 trillion? I mean, that's what this is. Okay. I never want to hear another word from any Republican or any Democrat or anybody for that matter. When they say, oh, no, liberal priorities? We can't afford it. We can't afford it. What are we going to do? We can't afford it. I mean, what, universal health care? Come on. It's too expensive. We can't afford it. Somehow every other modern nation on the planet can afford it. We can't, though. We're the number one country, but we're the worst country when it comes to health care because we just can't afford what every other country, modern country, can afford. Okay, but that makes no sense. Then people say, well, we got more people here than you can't compare us to Denmark. They have so few people. Okay, then hold on. There's another way to do a universal health care system, a single-payer system. You can mandate at the federal level by law that each state sets up their own at the state-level single-payer system through the state taxes. You can mandate that at the federal level. Then there's no rebuttal. Well, then my it's too large argument goes out the window. Now I got nothing. Exactly, you got nothing. We can't afford health care. We can't afford education. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Like what? Teaching our kids to be responsible citizens and to know stuff? That's too much to ask for what's called the best country and the most, you know, the number one country on the planet. It's too much to ask to educate people and have them know facts, how to have them know stuff, history. No. We can't afford universal education. Again, many modern nations have universal college too. We can't afford a paid vacation time by law, which would not cost that much at all. Can't afford it, man. We can't afford it. Clean water in Flint? I mean, what are you going to do? Shit happens. You can't afford to clean that up. We can't afford to fix that. But anyway, $2 trillion for the next generation fighter jet? Yeah, why not? Here, blank check. Okay, am I supposed to believe that the fourth generation one was that bad that, well, we got to spend $2 trillion on the newest one? What the fuck? Did the fourth generation one not fly? Did it not work? No, see, when it comes to finding more efficient ways to kill people, blank check. But when it comes to making sure people don't die with health care, you got nothing. We can't afford it. 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 We can afford $80 billion a year in a subsidy, a corporate welfare check to Wall Street banks. That's no problem. Pork barrel spending? Out the wazoo, no problem, take as much as you want. The military-industrial complex, like this. Please, please, all you guys paid your bribes, the legal bribes and campaign contributions to the federal government, so we will return the favor. So they're going to help you out and give you unlimited money. But for the people, no, you get fucked. And people wonder, well, why is, I don't get it, why is Congress's approval rating like 9%? Gee, I wonder why. Could it be because you're wasting money on this bullshit while... Did you know 76% of the American people are living paycheck to paycheck? Did you know about 50% of the American people are in or near poverty? Did you know worldwide, to branch it out here, I think it's now the richest 67 people have more wealth than the bottom 3.5 billion combined. So think about that. Less than 80 people, fewer than 80 people, have more wealth than 50% of the planet. I got news for you. It's not just because they worked harder. So pull yourself up by your bootstraps and work hard, and oh, look at that. About 65 people or so sucked up, you know, more wealth than half the world. That's not a thing. That isn't a meritocracy. That's not a meritocracy right there. priorities are so fucked up. And then they have the nerve to tell us. These establishment Democrats, too. The Republicans are so far gone. I mean, they masturbate over how much money we're giving to the defense contractors, and they want to give more to the defense contractors. So they're so far gone, I don't consider them legitimate in any way. But this Democratic Party is the wolf in sheep's clothing. As, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, no, we could do progressive goals, but incrementalism. We got to go gradual. We got to go gradual. We got to go step by step, little bit, because or else what are we going to do? Not give $2 trillion to build a shitty jet when the previous generation one worked fine? You're the radical. You're the radical. Not wanting to hand $2 trillion for a jet, assholes. By the way, war in Iraq, according to one estimate, will cost $7 trillion. $7 trillion by the year 2053. When all is said and done, you add in the interest and the amount we got to pay to the veterans for their health care after the fact, $7 trillion. So Hillary, who voted for that war, will turn around and say to us, we're just never going to get single payer. You know, it costs too much, it's too hard to implement at this late date. Oh, but you had $7 trillion for that shitty war you voted for, which was an offensive war against a country that didn't attack us. Fuck off. I'm tired of playing these games. This story should be the number one story on the news right now. We're wasting $2 trillion on this jet, $2 trillion, as if we don't have other problems and as if our infrastructure doesn't get a grade of D. That's what it is. Our infrastructure is crumbling, and we're spending $2 trillion on a jet. Okay. Next. The Alabama Secretary of State, John Merrill, is speaking out against automatic voter registration in his state, and his reasoning is cute. So he says, it cheapens the work of civil rights activists. Just because you turned 18 doesn't give you the right to vote. These people fought. Some of them were beaten. Some of them were killed because of their desire to ensure that everybody that wanted to had the right to register to vote and participate in the process. I'm not going to embarrass them by allowing someone that's too sorry to get up off their rear end to go register to vote because they think they deserve the right because they turned 18. Automatically voter registration is no different than giving them a trophy because they played on the ball team. Okay, no. The whole idea of giving them a trophy if they lose makes no sense because they lost. The idea of having the right to vote when you turn 18 because it's a right makes sense because it's a right. See, understand, to have to go through a process and get permission, to get a permit, the word permit is derived from permission. So that is the opposite of a right. It negates the idea of a right. So your argument is, well, voting is a privilege and you need permission for it. I need to give you a permit for it. Well, no, then you don't understand what those basic terms mean. If you have a right to vote, well, you have a right to it, and that means there should be no onerous process necessary to go through in order to be able to do it. And let's be clear, lest you think, well, what do you mean? He's just talking about registration. That's not that hard. Quote, Alabama is one of 14 states to enact voting restrictions recently, including voter ID laws. Oh, there we go. For those of you who don't know, voter ID is a way to suppress the vote. Some small percentage of people don't have an ID, so when they show up, it's, oh, okay, even though you're a citizen, even though we know you're a citizen, you don't have your ID on you, we're just going to reject you, and we're going to suppress the vote that way. I mean, that's the whole purpose of it. There are some Republicans who even have admitted it in moments of honesty where it slipped out, and they're like, oh, shit, I shouldn't have admitted that. One said, like, oh, I think we're going to win this state with the new voter ID law. Oh, shit, did I say that out loud? So it is an attempt to suppress the vote. But look at this idiot. He's arguing, well, the civil rights workers, you know, they'd want it to be harder for you to vote. What? No, they fought for the right to vote, and now you're adding extra hurdles in the way. And you keep saying, and I can't believe you're this stupid, just because you turned 18 doesn't give you the right to vote. Yes, it does. Of course it does. That's the point. It is a right. So, look. Hillary did this in the primary with Bernie Sanders, where internally her camp was like, yes, whenever there's a closed primary, we do better. So fewer people vote, the better. Yes. That's what they said in the primary. Now they flipped because now they need turnout to be higher because if turnout is higher in the general, the Democrat is more likely to win. But now the Republicans are doing what Hillary did in the primary, and the Republicans always do this because the lower the turnout, the more likely it is Republicans win. The higher the turnout, the more millennials go out. Millennials are overwhelmingly Democratic, and that means the more likely it is the Democrats win. So this is why he's arguing this. He might try to spin it in a million different ways. Well, this is why I say it. No. You're doing it because you want to suppress the vote because you want Republicans to win to the point where you say stupid things like, what do you think? Voting is a right? You're so kooky. Okay. Let's continue. We've had a horrific murder of three police officers in Iowa. They were killed ambush style. The suspect in the killing has been arrested. His name is Scott Green. The killings may be related to an incident that happened last month at a football game. Apparently, this guy was kicked out by officers after showing up with an American flag and a Confederate flag and then getting into it with black attendees. And during the altercation, he said blacks were doing a, quote, civil rights violation against him. That's cute. So picture this. Guy shows up to this football game. I don't know what it was, college, high school, whatever the fuck it was. Holding an American flag and a Confederate flag, giant contradiction. One fought against the other and did a rebellion against the other and tried to separate from the other, but he somehow thinks the Confederate flag represents America now? It's like, you can hold the two together and it's not a contradiction? But he shows up, he's got a Confederate flag, a big Confederate flag. The black people are like, hey man, what's up? He's like, oh, don't even, you disagreed with me? That's a civil rights violation. What happened? I thought you were the free speech guy. I thought your Constitution, free speech. Oh, a black person disagreed with me? You violated my civil rights is what's happening. Oh, God, what a loser. So he also went on to say this, quote, I was offended. Oh, should I do it in his voice? I'll do it in his voice. I was offended by the blacks sitting through our anthem. Thousands more whites fought and died for their freedom. However, this is not about the armed forces. They're cop haters. Okay, hold on. So, multiple layers of irony and stupidity here. He said thousands more whites fought and died for their freedom. You have the flag of the Confederate flag. You have the flag of the Confederate flag. You're holding the Confederate flag. Apparently, I can't talk today. Which symbolizes the exact opposite. The Confederate flag was all about, we don't want them to have freedom. We don't want them to have rights. We want them to be slaves. That's what we want. So this idea of like, well, you know, white people fought for their freedom and they're, you know, they're not very thankful for that. But you're the one who's holding the flag of them, of the opposite. So what do you want them to be thankful to you when you're representing the opposite of their enslavement? I can't. And then he says, it's not about the armed forces. They're cop haters. Let me remind you, this is the guy who just murdered two cops. No, three police officers, they say. Not two, three. I thought it was two. Oh, goodness. So, by the way, this guy was also arrested in 2001 on charges of domestic assault, assault causing bodily injury, and fourth-degree criminal mischief. He was also charged with drunken driving in 2010 and with first-degree harassment in 2014. So what it appears like we have here is a thug who is a cop killer. Now, do me a favor. Turn on the mainstream media. Has anybody spoken about this? I had to go, there was one website that had this story. It was Raw Story that had it. I didn't see anybody else have it. The only other thing I saw was I think Joe Biden canceled a political event in Iowa. I guess he was campaigning for Hillary Clinton in Iowa, and they canceled it because there was just a massacre of cops there. Now compare this to what happened in Dallas. In Dallas, you had a black radical murdered police officers. And what happened? Oh, it was huge news for at least 3 days. It covered the news cycle. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying don't cover that. Of course you cover that. Of course you cover that in detail. Police officers just got murdered. Of course. But why are they not? Nobody's talking about this one. Why? Is it because you can't blame the group of people you want to blame? Because last time everybody piled on Black Lives Matter. This time it's a white right-winger with a Confederate flag who says he hates cop haters as he murders cops. Like, what? This seems like a big story. But it's not getting any coverage. It's crazy, man. And look, it is a double standard. It certainly appears like it. There's not nearly as much coverage. It's the same thing with, remember the Robert Duggar case, the guy who's going to go massacre Muslims in New York, and he said, you know, the, then there was the one in Kansas, we're going to kill all the Somali immigrant Muslims, we're going to even kill their babies. These quotes are absurd. They found the stockpiles of weapons, they found the plans to do the attacks on the certain days. Whimper in the media. But if you flip the script, if it's an ISIS plot that's foiled and it was that detailed, it'd be an endless coverage. You know, in the case of the cop killer, if it's somebody who's black that does it, it gets the coverage. If it's this white right-winger, it's like, again, there was I had to go – one website I found this on. I could have covered this story yesterday. I missed it, and I had to come back and get it. No, okay, now I'll cover it. But it was one website. I don't get it. I don't get it. We need better coverage, and we need – it just be objective in your outrage. If you're mad about it when it's done by a group that you want to blame, well, you should also be mad about it when it's a group that you're not so quick to blame. But they're not. They're not. If it's the sexy narrative, ISIS bad, Black Lives Matter bad, okay, let's cover that. But if it's the white right-wingers or the sovereign citizens or something like that, just not that much coverage, man. I'm sure a lot of you guys didn't hear about this story until right now, and it happened a few days ago. Okay. Next, apparently there are limits to the liberalism of Pope Francis. Huffington Post is reporting that in a press conference, the Pope was asked if he would be open to female Catholic priests. And he said, quote, "Saint Pope John Paul II had the last clear word on this, and it stands. This stands." He was referring to a 1994 document that closed the door on female priesthood. Quote, "The Vatican says this teaching is an infallible part of Catholic tradition." So the reporter pressed the Pope and asked, "But forever? Never, never?" And he said, quote, "If we read carefully the declaration by St. John Paul II, it is going in that direction." So in other words, yeah, no. No female priests. End of conversation. Well, there you have it. So this is the Pope that everybody likes, and this is the more liberal Pope. And to be fair, that's totally true in many respects. He isn't, like you said about gays, like, who am I to judge or something like that. And he even said, I think atheists can get into heaven. So, look, he is super open-minded in so many ways. But, I mean, I think this story is a good warning about religion in general, which is once you've decided and once you've defined the parameters of your belief system, that being tied to this ancient doctrine in Catholicism or tied to the Bible or tied to the Quran or tied to the Bhagavad Gita. Once you've decided, well, this is the thing that we're going to look towards, and even if we're going to be liberal, we're going to have to find an interpretation within this thing. That sets up some basic problems, man, because then at a certain point, there's a limit to your progress. Apparently, he looks through the Bible and he looks through Catholic doctrine and he doesn't, you know, the catechism, I guess it's called, he doesn't find, there's not enough for him to be like, okay, I can spin this one to be like pro-women priests. Like in the Bible, for example, it says that women can't teach men anything. That's a part of the Bible. So, I mean, if you look at that, it's hard to spin that as, no, what they mean is, and then come up with some bullshit to allow women priests and allow women teachers. It looks like he threw in the towel on this one. He's like, yeah, I'm pretty liberal, but on the women issue, nope. So that's the problem, man, and this is the issue with religion. Now, look, I support any version of religion that moves away from the worst varieties of fundamentalism. So I like the liberal religious people way more than I like the fundamentalists and the literalists and the crazy right-wingers, of course. So I support that, and I support that reform and that moderation. But this is why, I'm somebody who's just non-religious, because once you throw out the paradigm of having to care about what your club thinks or what your doctrines say, well, then you actually get to make moral decisions based on reason and empathy and logic and go, okay, let's think this through, and how can we improve people's lives and not have to do it while tied to Mother Goose and Narnia? So I don't know if that makes me an asshole for saying it. A lot of people would say, oh, hey, that offends me. I'm religious. I mean, what am I going to tell you? I mean, it's not accurate. What you believe is not true. It's not based on reality, so I'm not gonna pretend it is just to make you feel better. I mean, you have a right to be in these different clubs if you so choose, but I'm just saying your club is kind of nonsense. So, and this is a good warning sign for even more progressive versions of religion, which is, how progressive are you really? Are you progressive enough to, in some instances where it appears like there's no escaping, there's no using flowery rhetoric and using curious arguments to try to make your religion more liberal? Are you liberal enough and humanist enough and empathetic enough and tolerant enough to say, hey, look, we're cornered on this issue with our doctrine, going to blow it off because we know the right thing to do is the opposite? I mean, there are religious people like that too, to be fair, but those religious people are religious people who view their religion as more of like a nationality than anything else. Like, just kind of like if you ask somebody, hey, you know, where are you from? Oh, I'm Italian, or oh, I'm American, whatever. It's like there's not necessarily anything that comes attached to that. It's just that's what I am. So there are people who are Christian or Muslim or Hindu or Buddhist or whatever who are like, yeah, I'm Buddhist. And then they don't read the doctrine, they don't care about the doctrine, they just call themselves that because it's almost like passed down through the generations. So those religious people exist, to be fair, who are totally humanist and secular, but they maintain the identity. But I guess my point is more geared towards even the liberal religious people who believe the doctrine but have their arguments to make it more liberal. I don't know. I think it works better for everybody if we just acknowledge that this stuff isn't really correct and we have a humanist, empathetic, sympathetic, kind system because it's just the right thing to do. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. So tomorrow, no live show like this, but we're going to do something special. I'm going to do the I Side With quiz and post it on YouTube right after, so you'll have basically what is a full show. I mean, it'll take me a while to get through that thing anyway. So that's what's going on tomorrow. Outside of that, I'll see everybody on Monday. All right, love you guys. See you later. Peace.